you are welcome to tonight's Citizens Climate University. It's a weekly webinar program of Citizens Climate Lobbies that provides CCL supporters like you and I with access to in-depth training opportunities on topics related to climate change and effective climate advocacy. I'm your host, Brett Cease, and tonight's topic is part two of our lobby training series for this fall's lobby meetings. We're going to specifically be focusing on primary and supporting Asinite, and we'll be joined by CCL's Vice President of Government Affairs, Ben Pendergrass, and Senior Director of Government Affairs, Jennifer Tyler, for a training that's going to review those updates and the context for our fall 2022 primary and supporting asks, as well as guidance for you and your lobby team as you plan your online meetings. So with that, though, I'd love to just welcome our two esteemed speakers tonight. We have the wonderful Ben Pendergrass, CCL's Vice President of Government Affairs, as well as Jen Tyler, CCL's Senior Director of Government Affairs. Both of them come from esteemed backgrounds on the Hill with plenty of experience working for members of Congress. And with that, I will let them tell a little bit more as we get started, but I'd love for all of you to know that if we've done our job well, our three learning goals tonight are to understand the current dynamics on the Hill and the opportunity for all of us as CCL advocates that we can play in our meetings within this lame duck period. We'll review what just happened with the election, what we know already and what we don't yet know, and we'll talk specifically about how our primary and supporting asks are going to set us up for success and how we can use them to accomplish moving our members forward with our lobby meetings. And to do that, we're going to have a pretty straightforward agenda. Ben's going to start by reviewing where we've been since June. We're going to then review the election, where a carbon price fits in all this, the opportunity for a lame duck, what a lame duck even is, maybe for some of us. We're going to talk about our current asks and close out with a little video, putting it all into practice. But with that, thank you all so much for joining us. Great to see almost 200 of us already on the line. And I will pass it to you, Ben, to take it from here.
Great. Well, thanks, Brett. Really appreciate that introduction. And welcome to everybody that joined us tonight. Really appreciate you joining us at this hour on a Thursday. First, I wanted to start with a little introduction of where we've come since June. You might remember the June primary ask was for Democratic senators and members of Congress to help America meet President Biden's climate pledge and to maintain climate ambition. Well, they did that with the passage of the IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act. It was one of the biggest climate bills in history. It was the biggest climate bill in history. And honestly, the tens of thousands of calls that CCL volunteers made over last year, the hundreds of lobby meetings they had, the relationships they had developed over years helped us get to that point. It really was a really big climate win, and it's going to lay the groundwork for emissions reductions for years to come. We've already talked about this win a lot, so I won't belabor it, but it's worth revisiting because it is a big deal, and it really will impact the climate and clean energy debate and policy for the next decade. There's no getting around that. So that's where we left off in June. As part of that reconciliation agreement, Joe Manchin had a deal with Schumer to discuss energy permitting reform. There's some concern that Manchin and others have that even with passage of the IRA, we're not going to get some of these projects built unless we can build things faster and change the way we permit and site energy projects. They had an agreement. They tried to include it in the end of the year continuing resolution and to fund government here that's going to expire in December. They thought they could attach it to that vehicle, which unlike reconciliation needed 60 votes and required the cooperation of Republicans. Now, Republicans were in a kind of sore mood a little bit from the process of reconciliation, which is by its very nature partisan. And so they were in not much of a mood to hand Senator Manchin something that he really wanted, another victory so close to passage of the IRA. So really and truly, like, Republican opposition kind of killed that permitting side deal, even though it had the support of Majority Leader Schumer and President Biden and some members of the Republican conference in the Senate. But that was one of the big things that happened since June. Lastly, you might notice we've been in the run-up to election. So right after that, the Congress voted to fund government and they got out of town. They've been gone ever since then. For some reason, they seem pretty preoccupied by keeping their jobs and or like helping other members keep their jobs And so they've been gone this entire time and will now only be back for the first time next week, start work again after the election. Now I'll turn it over to Jin for a couple of minutes to talk about just what exactly happened in the election and what it means to us.
Thanks, Ben. And so glad to see all of you on here tonight. So the election, if you're like me, you've been refreshing your Twitter feed or popping up the cable news every chance you can to see where we're at. And unfortunately, we still don't have final tallies of who's going to take the House or the Senate. So we don't know who's going to be in the majority in the House or the Senate. But current standings right now in the uncalled races show that Republicans are likely to retake the majority in the House, but it's going to be by a very slim margin. It could be anywhere from one additional Republican seat over Democratic seats to five seats. So Republicans, if they do retake the House, which seems likely, are going to have a really, really small majority. And the same goes on the Senate side. We don't know if it's going to be a Republican controlled Senate or Democratic controlled Senate, but either way, it's going to be a seat or two difference in the Senate. And what all that means is what we've kind of seen in years past, bipartisanship is going to be the way to go. It's going to be incredibly difficult for parties to move things just within their conference by themselves. So they're going to have to try to work across the aisle. Now, hopefully we'll find out in the coming days. It could be next week. It could be up to several weeks when we find out who's going to be controlling the House or the Senate. And that's because there's some outstanding races in states like Nevada, Arizona, Georgia. The Senate seat is going to a runoff in December, so there will have to be an additional vote in December. So it's going to take some time potentially to work some of this out. But no matter what, it's clear that it's going to be a really close margin in both chambers. Some of the big takeaways, the first one, I'm sure a sigh of relief for many of us, democracy worked. There were not many hiccups at all. It seems like candidates on both sides have accepted, you know, the way the democratic process worked. There's really good turnout numbers in a lot of parts of the country. So no small feat these days. I'm sure a lot of us were a little anxious on that note and really glad to see everything going smoothly. There's also some signs that partisan candidates were rejected. There were some moderate candidates, moderate Democrats, Representative Spanberger. Some of you might be familiar with her for her leadership on the Growing Climate Solutions Act. You know, she faced a pretty partisan far right candidate. And there were many Democrats in that situation and other members. And those partisan candidates really fell short. And polling was indicating they might be up. But it's very clear the voters have rejected, in many instances, those partisan candidates, and therefore furthering our calls that we've been beating the drum for bipartisan action, you know, getting away from these far polarized extremes and really working towards common sense. So that was so important. And then the biggest takeaway, I think, for a lot of us here in this call is that climate was not a loser. You know, I think even a couple of years ago, there were some races where candidates wouldn't want to even talk about climate because it wouldn't be a winning issue for them. But that's not what we're seeing anymore. Climate is trending to be a winning political issue. And we've got some of our champions in the House and the Senate, like Representative Nancy Mace, Senator Bennett, Representative Don Bacon, who introduced the Growing Climate Solutions Act. He did that by breaking with his party. All of those members were in incredibly competitive seats and they won. And they put climate at the forefront. It was one of their top issues in their campaign and has been. So it's definitely, definitely trending towards a winning issue. So how's this election going to affect the lame duck? Either way, whoever takes which chamber, it's going to be super, super close next Congress. So it's really important that we're sending a strong message to the next Congress that they have to continue working on climate. That's why we have to finish out strong. We need to get these victories when we can. Not all of these bills are going to be able to be reintroduced and passed next Congress. So we need to get them across the finish line using the momentum we've already developed. But we really need to push that next Congress by showing them right now, there's a strong signal that they have to keep this going into next year. How's this going to impact the next Congress while we're talking about it? Well, no matter what, bipartisanship is going to be the way to go. I mentioned this before, but obviously this is our bread and butter. This is what we were built on, founded on. This is what we've worked so hard to do to form these relationships on both sides of the aisle. And now's the time where we're going to be able to really put that to the test, put that to use. We're really going to be able to position ourselves in a divided Congress, which typically a lot of people think of that as just gridlock, nothing happens, but our grassroots army, we're going to be able to prevent that. We're going to be the voices in both offices, on both sides of the aisle, telling them they have to keep moving on climate. This is not one of the issues that can get gridlocked. This is one we have to keep moving forward on and build on that momentum that we've created. So a lot of work to be done in the next Congress, and exciting times given how well positioned we are to keep this moving forward. So a lot of really hope and optimism on my end, but still refreshing my Twitter feed. So I will turn it back over to Ben to talk a little bit about carbon pricing and where that fits into all of this.
Thanks, Jen. That was a really great overview of what the election means to us and what it could mean for climate legislation. I want to take a couple minutes and just talk about carbon pricing. I want to make it clear that, you know, even though the IRA was a big deal and we really leaned into that, we still believe a carbon price is necessary. We're going to need it to hit the emissions reductions we know that are necessary. Next Congress, there will be several carbon pricing bills introduced. We are almost sure of that. We believe the Energy Innovation Act will be reintroduced. We think other carbon pricing bills that have different policy designs may be introduced. We think a CBAM leaning bill that might have different prices for different sectors of the economy might also be introduced. And some or all of these bills might be bipartisan. There's still an interest in continuing to work on carbon pricing bills in Congress. However, you know, we don't want to make that front and center for this particular lobby push in December. In your meetings, we think it's worthwhile to acknowledge that CCL still believes a carbon price is necessary. And you will see that in our primary asks, that we make that acknowledgement, but we don't want to make that the focus of the meeting. And how does that look? I mean, that could just be a real simple acknowledgement when you kind of get the meeting started and they ask what's on the agenda. You can say, hey, we still believe a carbon price is necessary, but today we're here to talk to you about other issues. And so, like, CCL's work on carbon price is certainly not done. I can promise you that. And you'll really hear a lot more about our strategy on carbon pricing for the next Congress at the December 3rd conference. That's where we're really going to kind of lean in that space. And like tonight, we're going to focus more on what we can achieve now in the lame duck. Because, I mean, being honest, we know a carbon price is not going to advance in the lame duck. Something like that's just not going to come up. But we have these other very important bipartisan bills that we know can move in the lame duck. And so that's where we're going to put our focus. And I'll hand it back over to you, Jed, to talk a little bit more about the lame duck and what the opportunities there are.
Thanks, Ben. So lame duck, the period between an election, post-election, pre the start of a new Congress. So from, you know, November 6th or 8th or whatever the date was, I'm losing track of time, November 8th this year to the beginning of next year when the new Congress is rung in, that's the lame duck period. And typically people think of that as, well, you know, there's no reason to do anything. Members aren't going to do anything. They're all just, you know, they've either won or they've lost re-election or they're retiring. There's no motivation there. But in actuality, there's a lot of movement during lame duck. When I was on the Hill, I would, after the election, just want to celebrate and relax. But that was one of the busiest times I had, was during a lame duck period, because we had this stack of bills that we couldn't get to move for 2 years that all of a sudden we had a chance to move. And the reason for that is that a lot of bills are put into these big year-end packages. So this year we've got the National Defense Authorization Act, a big defense bill that funds all of DOD. That's going to have a bunch of other priorities in it, not related to defense. And then you also have the omnibus bill. That's the big government spending bill that'll fund the government through a certain date, probably the end of next September, next year. And that is also going to have a ton of different policies and provisions in it. So all of a sudden, any bill that an office was struggling to get through as a standalone bill, they're going to try to cram it in one of these big bills. And that's exactly what we're going to try to do. There's also a lot more flexibility for members of Congress in the lame duck. If they're retiring, well, now they have a bunch of flexibility. They're retiring. They're not held, you know, in January, they're not going to be held accountable to any constituents. They feel a little more room to move. And if your member won re-election, well, again, they have a little bit of breathing room. They're not getting hounded on by the press. They're not constantly having to talk to voters and fight for their reelection, they have some room. They're able to satisfy some constituent requests that they didn't before. I would say maybe that's CCL requests that they weren't able to fulfill before. Now they can do that. So I would encourage you, even if you've talked to your member of Congress before on these asks, circle back. They're going to have a different mindset. We've got some leverage here to say, hey, it's the end. This is the last chance you've got to satisfy this request we have. Chances are they're going to feel they have a lot more breathing room to satisfy some of these requests that we have. And lastly, there's a firm deadline. Members of Congress, they want to get out of town. They want to leave for Christmas. The last thing they want to do is be working over the holidays. So they might be debating RISE Act. Should we include it? Should we not include an omnibus? Someone's going to throw up their hands and say, just put it in there. I want to go home. I want to go home for Christmas. There's a lot of things that just get thrown in and done quickly because they want to leave for Congress. And they want to clear the decks before the next one. They want to get as much out of the way as they can and start clean the next Congress. So talking about this lobby day going into our lame duck, now that we're all motivated and we realize all the potential that there is, we want to finish strong. This, like Ben said, it's been the biggest Congress for climate in the history of our nation, of the world. And this Congress, we're focusing on two major priorities. One, we want to reinforce with Democrats the huge victory that the IRA was. You know, we don't want that to go unnoticed. We don't want them to think we're just moving right along, asking them for more and more and more. We want to thank them and let them know we're with them. We're going to work with them to make sure that their vote and their continued support of the IRA doesn't go unnoticed in their districts, and that we're really going to be there as the IRA is implemented and make sure we're protecting it. So that's the first one if you have a Democratic member of Congress in the House or the Senate. The second priority for any member of Congress is we've got to get these climate wins across the finish line. We've got three outstanding bills that have a really good chance of passage: the Growing Climate Solutions Act, the RISE Act, and the NCARS, the National Climate Adaptation and Resiliency Bill. Those all stand a really good chance of being included in one of these year-end packages. So why these bills? Why are these bills important? Other than the fact that I just said we can get them across the finish line, which is huge. But these bills specifically, we want more climate wins. We want to set the foundation for next Congress. If we have these smaller, what I call smaller because the IRA was huge and a carbon price would be tremendous, it would be huge. These are smaller in scale, but these smaller victories make bigger victories like a carbon price easier down the road. We're building engagement with individual members. We're building coordination and collaboration on bipartisan climate action. And that's so important after the process of the IRA. It was very partisan, and obviously we supported climate action, but we want to rebuild those bipartisan bridges in Congress on climate. So it's so important that we keep focusing on our larger long-term goals, like Ben said, on carbon price. But right now, getting these smaller bills across the finish line and this lobby day focusing on them, that's going to make next Congress getting these larger priorities further and further down the road. It's going to make it so much easier. So we're just setting the foundation here. And I'll let Ben take it over and talk about what those specific primary asks are going to be.
Thanks, Jen. So let's talk about the primary ask. You know, traditionally, we've had like one big primary ask. Because of the different segments and where these bills are positioned and who needs to engage and what the best strategy is to get them over the finish line, we're going to have four separate primary asks, one for Senate Democrats, one for Senate Republicans, one for House Republicans, and one for House Democrats. And so we'll start with the Senate Democratic ask. So, I mean, it's going to be we want to say thank you for the hard work you put in on the IRA. It was a big win, and we don't want to just not acknowledge it, like Jen said. But we still want to like put in there, we still think carbon price is necessary, just not the focus of these meetings. But the real message is, let's finish strong. This is the biggest Congress for climate action ever, and we can still do more. And the RISE Act and NCARS are well positioned. And really for the Senate, this is where the action is going to be on these two bills for the most part. They are best positioned to include them in the end of the year omnibus bill. There's some slight chance that something could be put on the NDAA, but it's much more likely that they're going to end up in the omnibus bill, and that's where we can put our muscle behind them. So we want to ask people to co-sponsor them and support their passage in one of the end of the year packages. Every member we get on these bills makes it more likely that they will end up in the package or have support from leadership for final inclusion. So that's where we are with Senate Democrats. On Senate Republicans, the ask is a little bit different, but same bills. We want to like let them know that this is an opportunity to make America more resilient in the face of all these extreme weather events. And so for them, it's the same ask that is passing NCARS and the RISE Act. Those are the bills. Those are bipartisan bills. There's a lot of Republican support there already. But because this is not like the reconciliation process, we need 60 votes. All the end of the year package is going to need Republican support. And so every Republican on one of these supporting that, one of these Taylor bills, makes it more likely to end up in that final package. Now, with Senate Republicans, we do have a supporting ask. It's the Forest Act. We've lobbied on this bill for a while before. It's really important to help take action against international deforestation, particularly places like Brazil. But right now, it's not a supporting ask for Democrats because we have enough Democratic support in the Senate already. This is a bill, it's not going to pass in the lame duck, but what we're trying to do is set up for a really strong reintroduction in the new Congress. There's several Republican members that are looking at the bill right now. And as a supporting ask, it's a really good place to start to say, hey, we really want you to focus on these two bills to get them over the finish line right now. But for next Congress, start thinking about the Forest Act. We know they're not likely to co-sponsor at the very end of Congress, but we want them maybe coming on right when it's reintroduced in January or February. So that's a really good supporting ask for Senate Republicans. For House Democrats, it's a little bit different. Still the message of like, finish strong and thank you for all your work on the IRA. And still an acknowledgement that we think a carbon price is necessary, but we want to focus on the Growing Climate Solutions Act. Most of you probably remember it passed the Senate 92-8. So the ball is really in with the House now. They're the ones that need to take action. Leadership over in the House is thinking about moving the bill in two ways. Hopefully as a standalone bill, that would be optimal because it'd be really cool because that almost never happens anymore. Everything still happens in a big package like Jen said, but there is a chance Growing Climate Solutions Act might get its own vote. And so we want the main ask to be co-sponsor, if you're not already a co-sponsor, but more importantly, co-sponsor and pass Growing Climate Solutions Act, whichever way you can, either as standalone legislation or as part of a package. And the House is where we really want to push that. Supporting ask for Democrats over in the House is the RISE Act. It was just recently introduced in the House just a couple weeks ago. And so it hasn't had time to get any co-sponsors. Most of the action on RISE is still going to be in the Senate, but it helps RISE to get more co-sponsors in the House, and there's not a big imbalance yet. So it's still a good supporting ask for House Democrats. House Republicans, same thing as House Democrats, Growing Climate Solutions. It's a bipartisan bill. The messaging is a little bit different. You know, not fishing strong, but helping support American farmers. That's like the message we want to put in with that. And that's kind of the verbiage you'll notice in the primary ask for both the House and Democrats and House Republicans, even though the bill is the same, how we're framing it as an issue is a little bit different because they do have different concerns and things they like about the bill. So we are definitely framing it much more as this is a bill that helps farmers get paid for the good work they're already doing. It's voluntary. We want to bring home that message, though. Still need every Republican vote and every co-sponsor to get over the finish line. So that's the primary ask. And with House Republicans, all the other bills, RISE, Forest, NCARS, you can all use any of those bills as supporting asks. Those would all be helpful, but we still want the focus to be the Growing Climate Solutions Act, and the other bills can be simply supporting asks. And the last thing, this is not at all a CCL ask, but because we're talking about these bills are really the biggest climate things that will come up in the lame duck. I do want to touch on that permitting reform might come back up again. There's a little context here because Senator Schumer and Senator Manchin have said they plan to bring it up again. President Biden has said he encourages doing that, but the electoral outcome here will make a big difference. If Republicans end up taking both houses, it's probably unlikely permanent reform comes up because they're going to have the gavel now. They will want to wait until next Congress where they can more shape any kind of permanent reform bill around energy to things that are more in line with their priorities. There's really no motivation for them to agree to include a permanent reform bill. If Republicans just take the House and Democrats have the Senate, there is a chance that a group of Democratic and Republican senators come together to forge a compromise that can get wide buy-in from both parties. And we'll just be monitoring this. But the thing, because it is so important to climate and the climate debate and policy, we are having a deep dive on this next week on the 17th with Dana, our research coordinator. So be sure if you're interested in this topic to join us for the 17th, where he will do a deep dive into what's going on with permitting reform, why people think it could be necessary, and how they're thinking about constructing these possible changes to how we permit clean energy projects in the country. And now I think we'll do a little bit deeper dive into the bills we are focusing on. And Jen's going to kick us out off with just a little refresher on the Growing Climate Solutions Act.
Yeah, thanks, Ben. And I think that was such a helpful overview. And I know it's a lot, and we are getting very nuanced in the different segments and what messages to take to different members, how to even portray a bill differently between different members. And the reason for that is that you guys are great at this. You guys know the difference. You know your members, you know your regions and your communities. And you're really able to take those specific messages to specific members in the most effective way. Most fly-ins, most lobby days, it's one message for every single member of the House and Senate. But you guys know exactly how to do this. You know how to play the game. You know how to really be the most effective lobbyist you can. And that's why we're giving you so much detail and so much nuance, because you've been doing such a great job, and we're just trying to make this even more strategic and more successful as we go. So if you've got questions and stuff, we'll get to all of that. But I just want to reinforce how fantastic you all are. So diving into the Growing Climate Solutions Act, it has already passed the Senate, which is why it's not an ask on the Senate side. It was passed by a vote of 92-8 with more Republicans than Democrats passing it. It's such an amazing show of bipartisan support for a bill that has climate solutions in the title. I mean, if 6 years ago you told me that would happen, pass with more Republicans than Democrats in the Senate, I would tell you you're crazy. So it's such a big win. And now we just need to get it over that final hurdle, get it over the House. CCL, we've been supporting this. You guys have been working on this from the very beginning. Before it was even reintroduced, we've been working on it. So really the passage in the Senate is so largely due to everything you all have done. And now we've just got to take these final steps. As a little reminder, the bill helps farmers and forest landowners participate in carbon credit markets. It also gives USDA a seat at the table. So these markets are already existing. We're trying to help farmers and landowners participate in them, which is obviously good for the climate. It's good for reducing carbon, but it's also good for farmers and landowners from a revenue perspective. The significance of this is we want to get farmers on side with climate solutions. It's really built a bridge between the climate side of things and the ag sector. There's a bunch of ag groups, the Farm Bureau, Cattlemen's Association, who have engaged on climate in a whole new way because of this bill. So it's a tremendous victory in it by itself, but passage is going to be huge. We set this as a primary ask for House Republicans because we've received some word that there's been opposition by the ranking member of the House Agriculture Committee. So there's a holdup in the House due to House Republicans who don't want to pass the bill. So we really want to prioritize this if you have a House Republican member and really focus on the benefit to farmers and ranchers. That's what, you know, they care about their constituents. If they've got ag in their district, they care about those producers. That's the angle we want to focus on. Obviously, we love the climate side of things, but most Republicans are going to want to hear about how does it benefit their constituents. And lastly, there has been some opposition from progressive Democrats in the House. And that's really based on misunderstandings of the bill. So if you have a progressive Democrat in the House, they might be opposed to the bill. And you might hear that as you bring it up in your meeting. The reason they're opposed to it, there's some words out there that this bill would create carbon credit markets. It would be only for big ag or for factory farming, it would not benefit the little guys. And that's in no way true. What we want to respond to them with or make clear if they don't bring that up is just that these carbon credit markets already exist. They're already happening. Farmers and ranchers are already able to participate. What this bill does is it helps them participate. And most importantly, for progressive Democrats, it allows federal oversight of these credit markets. Right now, USDA, there's no federal oversight of this at all. So this bill would allow the USDA a seat at the table, and it would allow Congress to conduct oversight of these credit markets and make sure that it's not just benefiting factory farming, but that it really is benefiting everyone across the board. I will now move on to NCARS, the National Climate Adaptation Resiliency Bill. And the big significance of this is it really does increase bipartisan support for national climate policies. So it gets members of Congress on the record supporting one whole of government climate solution. Instead of different government agencies and departments operating independently, some having a really aggressive climate plan, some having no climate plan, this would make sure there's one unified, cohesive approach, which not only makes it more effective because it's not inefficient, there's no redundancies, but it also makes sure that there is a plan, that departments or agencies who haven't taken as much action are now taking more action. So it's really big from the climate perspective in terms of our federal government's climate footprint and the approach the federal government can take. But it also makes sure that members of Congress are speaking out saying we do need to think of this cohesively from a national perspective, not just individual small one-off policies and provisions. This did pass out of the committee in the Senate. So it's already moved. We're seeing a lot of momentum on this. There's really tremendous bipartisan sponsors in the House and the Senate that I would encourage you to share with your member of Congress to show them what a good track record this bill has and that it's already moving. And we have set this as most appropriate for Senate Democrats and Senate Republicans. Because of the movement out of committee, we're hoping that it will get across that final stage with some buy-in from the Senate, get put into the omnibus, the big spending bill. And with that, I'll turn it over to you, Ben, for the RISE Act.
All right. Well, I'll talk a little about the RISE Act. We think it's an excellent bill because, one, right now, offshore oil revenue is shared with states, and there's no similar program for offshore wind. So it really puts offshore wind and offshore oil development on different pages and have different motivations for the states involved. So this would set up a new revenue sharing program, very similar, almost exact to what now happens with oil, where 37.5% of this money is returned to the states, all for coastal resiliency funding. So we know there's a great need. We know even if we pass the carbon price tomorrow, there's still going to be these impacts on our shorelines and our coastlines. There's going to be weather impacts to these communities. This creates a dedicated funding source for these communities to help harden themselves, do coastal restoration. So just on that level alone, it's a great bill. But it also helps develop offshore wind as an industry. Right now, there's really not the same level of motivation for states to develop their offshore wind industry the way there is for oil. And this would change that. This would create a clear incentive to develop the industry. Other things that are good, it also sends revenue into a National Oceans and Coastal Security Fund that even the Great Lakes can utilize for some of their coastal needs. And all states, even if you don't have offshore wind, but you have coastline, will benefit from this fund. So it will really redistribute this money in a good way. They can only use this money for certain projects that are really in line with what we would think were good projects for coastal resiliency and restoration. And there's a couple of things in here for Republicans that they like. It lifts the cap. Right now, there's a cap on how much of the similar Go Mesa program that sends money back to states with oil revenue. It would lift the cap so places like Louisiana, Texas, could see more revenue from those programs that they also can only use for certain purposes. And so it benefits these places, and particularly with Republicans, it's not about a bad idea to lead with the fact that this cap is lifted. Another thing in this bill that actually benefits all states is it also lifts a cap on land and water conservation funding. Right now, there's a cap of only $120 million of offshore oil revenue that goes to the Land and Water Conservation Fund that goes and funds a bunch of projects around the country, national parks and things like that, it lifts the cap. So then a certain percentage will always go back to Land and Water Conservation Fund. There's going to be more funding for conservation projects around the country. And so that's good for inland states. So there's a little something in here for everybody, not just coastal states. And we think it's a really good bill. Like NCARS, it passed out of committee this summer with bipartisan support on a voice vote. So it's well positioned to be included in this omnibus package at the end of the year. And once again, it's really a Senate play. So we want to focus on Senate Republicans and Senate Democrats, get a couple more co-sponsors. And one of the great resources we have in community is Citizens Climate Lobby, along with the EDF and some other groups. The Nature Conservancy and Audubon have signed a letter to leadership asking this be included. And this lays out the case. You can download that letter on community along with the one pages for all these bills. Another great resource that I just thought about with the Growing Climate Solutions Act that could be really valuable is there's also a list of all the myriad of supporters of the Growing Climate Solutions Act that you should definitely download and use in all your means where you're talking about that, where you can really see the broad support for that bill as well. Lastly, I just want to touch on the Forest Act. So this is not in any of the primary asks because, like I said, we don't think it's going to move in the lame duck, but we think it's going to definitely have more legs next Congress. So we want to set it up for a strong reintroduction. And what this bill does is it basically uses the power of American markets to start moving countries that have a problem with illegal deforestation away from this. Right now, there's a lot of commodities that are produced on illegally deforested land in places like Brazil and Indonesia. What the Forest Act would do is it would prohibit the import of these commodity products like beef and soybeans and rubber and cocoa if it was produced on illegally deforested land. It simply amends the Lacey Act, which is a law that's been on the American books for almost over 100 years, that you're probably familiar with things that are prohibited from being imported, like rhinoceros horns or certain kinds of rare timber. Those are all things that are prohibited under the Lacey Act. What this would simply do is it would make these commodities similar to these other prohibited products and put downward pressure on these countries to take action, to establish verification in supply chains, to know that if you're going to cut down rainforest in Brazil to produce cattle to sell the United States, we won't allow that. And it also is good for American producers. We are obviously not cutting down rainforest or any other forest land illegally to produce cattle or any other commodity in this country. So these countries that do this are really bad actors and put our producers at a disadvantage. This is one reason the American Cattle Association is a supporter of this bill. And we expect other producers to also start being more vocal in their support of the bill as it progresses through the process. And so it's a really key component to addressing that global deforestation. And once again, we think the best place to start with this is a supporting ask specifically for Senate Republicans, but also House Republicans wouldn't be bad either, but I'm just kind of focused on the Senate for this one. Those are our primary and supporting asks. We have a matrix here. I know we've provided quite a bit of information. We got four really important bills, three that we really think we can move over the finish line. And this is just a different way of viewing this information about what bill might be good for what member of Congress in what chamber in what party. And I think we also have this up on community, so you can definitely use this as a reference guide.
Yeah, let's put this all together. And thank you so much, Ben and Jen, for just that incredibly in-depth review. We are going to take a little pause from the policy wonky side of our CCL brains and think about how we can be effective communicators when we're getting ready for these meetings, right? Because this is really what it's all about. How can we connect and move our members forward and help them feel listened to have them be better climate champions? So to do that, we're gonna have a fun little 2-minute video that our wonderful effective communications action team just put together with a scenario that shows some of these key concepts that you can learn more about if you join their action team and find out more about what they're up to with the context of a quick meeting where you ask the member of Congress to support legislation for a carbon border adjustment. So I'll play this short 2-minute video to help remind us of the importance of open-ended questions, affirmations, reflective listening, and finding common ground. And then I'll pass it back to you, Ben, to wrap up the actual final summary before we go to Q&A.
John, we really appreciate your meeting with us today. And thank you. Please thank the Congresswoman for her support of the Growing Climate Solutions Act. Thanks. Your voice really matters to us. We really want to hear what you have to say on climate.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And I'll be sure to share your kind words with the Congresswoman.
Thank you for taking that back to the Congresswoman. And we were hoping today to talk about the carbon border adjustment mechanisms and also to figure out how we can help you with your goals. And to do that, we wanted to know, how do you think we could best approach our common goals of protecting the environment and our children?
Well, I think the Congresswoman would say that the best way to protect our kids is to keep the economy strong and make sure their parents have good jobs.
Yes, it sounds to me like you're concerned about jobs and the economy. At the same time, the Congresswoman has said that she's concerned about competition with China.
Oh, yeah, she's very concerned about that.
I think maybe something we could both support could create a trade benefit for U.S. companies. Bills that have a carbon border adjustment mechanism give a trade advantage to U.S. companies because U.S. manufacturers are innovative and already use cleaner manufacturing processes. It would enable us to have more manufacturing jobs over here in the United States. Would the Congresswoman be interested in supporting such a bill?
Well, I'm sure she'd be willing to take a look at that. If you could send over some more information, I'd be happy to pass it on.
We can definitely make that happen. We'll get you that information soon. Thank you, John.
Well, thank you. It's good to see you all.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you to John, Beth, Arlene, and Lisa for that. A great little demonstration of some really key communication principles, regardless of your ask. So again, you can put that into practice with any of the actual supporting asks that Ben and Jenna discussed. And with that, I'll pass it back to you, Ben.
But just to sum things up, you know, elections matter, and we just got through one. Democracy worked. And we know, as we've always known, that we're going to have to work in a bipartisan fashion. This was the biggest Congress we've ever had for climate action, but we can finish strong. We can end up with more victories, more bipartisan victories by leaning in on these bills now. And we can go out and get them done. We can do all this while continuing to build support for carbon price and keep that as a priority in next Congress. And once again, like, really come join us December 3rd to hear more about that and our plans for that and all our other policy priorities that we're going to be talking about on December 3rd. But it really is important to lock in these bipartisan climate wins now. We really thank you guys for all your hard work. None of these things happen. All the bills we've gotten over the finish line in the past, supporting ASS, passage of the IRA, this is all due to your hard work and dedication. And now we can go out and get some more wins for the climate. And I think with
excellent. And on that inspirational note, we have reached time. So I am going to put a little reminder where you can, after tonight, go to our forum, cclusa.org/forum. So follow up on anything that we've mentioned that you haven't had a chance to ask or to get an answer that you've asked. And then also, if you have any questions, you are more than welcome to check out our page on YouTube or on CCL Community to find where that additional information is going to be. So again, that's just cclusa.org/YouTube or search in CCL Community for primary and supporting asks. So with that, though, let us all unmute. I'm going to unmute all lines so that we can thank Ben and Jen for all of their amazing work. It's so good to see all of you here tonight. We hope that you found tonight's training useful and empowering. Stay safe, and we can hear all about your lobby meetings. Thank you, everyone.
Thank
Big
you.
Daddy Brett.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jen.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Citizens Climate Lobby's training program. You can tune into more episodes anywhere podcasts are available. Inspired by what you heard today? Join Citizens Climate Lobby to advocate for bipartisan climate solutions. Go to community.citizensclimate.org to find more trainings, resources, your local chapter, national action teams, discussion forums, and more. Be sure to like our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Citizens Climate. We also invite all of our listeners to subscribe to our YouTube channel for more inspiration.
Like what you hear? Recommend us to your friends and make sure to give us a 5-star rating. It helps us show up on other listeners' feeds. Feel free to pass on any suggestions for future episodes in the comments as well.
And together, we are creating the political will for a livable world.